boondoggle, boondoggle. What the heck's a boondoggle? Check out yachtangler.com, your ultimate kayak fishing resource.
Give me the Flats of Dawn with plenty of tailing fish.
And the perfect fly rod.
Yeah!
And get ready for some magic.
What an awesome eat, man! I got one! Oh, damn, I got him, I got him.
Join Bonefish and Tarpon Trust.
Nice fish.
And help make sure that the magic never ends. Visit tarbone.org to find out how you can help.
Boondoggle.
Boondoggle. What the heck is a boondoggle? It's a bunch of crazy kayakers getting together in Virginia Beach October 5th through 8th. For more information, check out yakangler.com, the ultimate resource for kayak fishermen.
Hey. Good Monday evening to everybody. Happy Memorial Day weekend to you guys as well. I hope everyone had a safe one. I hope everybody took time to say a little prayer for all those who have given the ultimate sacrifice so that we could enjoy our weekend and have the liberties that we do in this country. Somebody put it on Facebook earlier and it was awesome. It said there was a picture of a widow that was laying next to the tombstone of her husband, and it said there's a caption there, and it said, "Just so you know, it's not about the barbecue." So I think that's important to kind of drive that home. I know most of you guys, a lot of our listeners and a lot of our close friends with Kayak Fishing Radio are former military themselves. So kudos to all of you guys for what you guys do and have done and continue to go through. But anyhow, it is Monday morning. This is the Monday night kickoff show. I am your host, Charles Levi, also known as Redfish Chuck. As always, I have a panel of experts joining me tonight. Go first over here to Mr. Rob, a bad podcast DeVore. How are you, bud?
Hey, man, I'm good. How are you?
Doing
Happy
well.
Memorial Day. Happy Memorial Day to everybody.
And to you, and to you. Doing well, man. This weekend celebrated Trey's third birthday, which was awesome. Our little man's growing up really quick. Wanted to take him fishing yesterday. Didn't get a chance to do that because of the wind and, you know, first thing in the morning before his party. So this afternoon, we just ran over to a couple of my favorite ditches. As you guys know, I like to ditch fish from time to time. And he went 0 for 6 on baby tarpon this morning, which was pretty fun to watch. A couple of times he freaked out when the fish came out of the water and dropped the rod and ran. So, you know, he'll learn. He's only 3. But I'll tell you what was the coolest part about it is that I hooked the first one that I hooked on the fly. I had a good hook set in him, and I went to turn the rod over to him and have him reel it in. And he was like, "No, Daddy, you catch it. You hook it. You catch it." And I was like, "Wow, that's awesome." Like, he already doesn't want the pass off. So that's cool. Let's see, who else? I got long lost Mr. Bill Haywood. How are you, sir?
What's happening?
Glad to have you on, man. Glad to have you on.
Good to be here.
Did you have a decent weekend so far?
It was all right. Just spent the day with the family today and went fishing yesterday and Saturday, I don't know what it is. I can't remember. It's too many days ago.
Don't worry about it, man. I'm with you on that. Now, seeing you've been getting on some redfish, that's cool, and using the SST baits from who's that?
Slayer Inc.
Slayer Inc. There you go.
Sinister Swimtail.
What does it stand for?
Sinister Swimtail.
There you go. I've been checking them out, man, last couple of weeks on Facebook and looking at all the postings, and man, you guys are killing it with that bait. So I definitely have to get my hands on some here very shortly.
I'll have a review of them up real soon.
Oh, very cool. On yakangler.com?
Yeah.
Looking for a group of kayak anglers to share your kayak fishing adventures with? Check out yachtangler.com, your ultimate fishing resource.
God, I like having buttons. And of course, hang on, I gotta find his music. He's in here somewhere. If I can find it quick enough, I don't want to. Maybe he's gonna yell at me for even looking for his music. Probably. Here it is.
I was trying to figure out if I could do the yachtangler.com voice, but I decided not to.
How did you end up with that as your intro, Becker?
Dude, you're asking the wrong person. I think actually Rob started that, if I remember correctly.
Nope, wasn't me.
I thought it was maybe one too many Doc-like comments, and all of a sudden I was phone broke.
No, Chip has a Mac, too, so he has GarageBand and comes up with stuff as well. That's one of, I think that might be one of Chip's creations.
But at any rate, it's great to be here.
It's great to have you here, sir, as always. And I got a couple of folks there over there in the chat room. Got some really cool announcements to make tonight. Try and get some folks involved in a project that myself and a very good friend of mine, Chris Flores, has going on. We'll get to that a little bit later on. I'll let some of the stragglers come in here in a little bit. But I think topic of tonight's going to be fishing before and after rainstorms. We've talked about it before, but the last couple of days have been kind of important. This would be a kind of an important conversation piece. Today was a good example of that over here on the Space Coast. We've been pummeled the last day and a half with the bands from that tropical storm that's hitting Jacksonville or in that area up there. So, and the ditches and the canals have been moving, man. The water's really kicking out of there at a pretty good clip. I saw a lot of bait moving around that I haven't seen in a while, and there was a whole lot of fish activity. There was more than just the tarpon out there today. There was tarpon, there was ladyfish, a couple small snook. I saw some small redfish crushing some bait out towards the mouth of one of the ditches. So it was pretty cool. There's a lot of things going on right now. But even more so than that, today while I was driving back from one of the ditches, I noticed that the river started to kind of flatten out a little bit as the rain was coming down. And all I could think of was throwing topwater plugs for big giant trout. Rainy situations, while they can be dangerous with the lightning and everything else, can be killer times to fish. If you're willing to take advantage of the situation, you can score pretty big. The last couple of times I've been on the water right after a rainstorm, I had stellar days where you park outside of a culvert pipe or park just outside of a canal that dumps into the intercoastal and just fish that turbulent water right there. And, man, it's game on. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that the fish don't really have an opportunity to really inspect what's coming at them. You know, things are flowing out of the pipes and coming out of the canal so quick that if they don't jump on it, they might miss a chance to eat. Rob, what do you do before, like right before a storm or after a heavy rain, or even during rain? Do you fish at all during the rain?
Not if I can help it. I don't know. If it's raining, I'm looking for a bridge or a mangrove island. If it's just rain, it doesn't really bother me. But if it's lightning, I'm kind of trying to find something to hide under. I don't know. I don't really think of it, you know, beforehand. Because it's so, you know, if it's going to rain or something, I'm usually not planning on going if I can help it. But if it pops up or something, you know, I don't really have a plan for it. But after, you know, usually is, you know, like you say, you look for culvert pipes or somewhere where it's going to wash in from land. And those are always good feeding stations, man. You know, drag some stuff in and it gets the whole food chain started.
Yeah, very cool. Bill, I know that you're kind of an all-weather guy. I don't think rain really bothers you much. You got any tips that you use over there or special tricks or areas that you like to really kind of target when the water's moving?
No, we really don't have the culvert fishing over on this side of the bay, like they do on the, you know, the Pinellas on the west side. But there are a few places where we have creeks that dump into local flats, and those will always be real productive if we have a really heavy rain, because, you know, they're just flushing. They're flushing all kinds of stuff out with them. So if it's been a heavy rain, then I try to target those areas when I can. But, you know, most of the time that water is flushing out just shortly after a heavy rainstorm. So maybe the next day, you know, there won't be a lot of water left coming out of those places. There might be, just depends on how much you get. And then it seems snook love it. Redfish, they can tolerate it, and maybe trout. But it's just been my experience. If you get a big dump of fresh water, that the redfish kind of move out deeper where it's a little bit more salty.
Right.
But the snook don't seem to mind it as much. In fact, I know a lake in Central Florida that's got tarpon and snook in it, and it's strictly fresh water.
Wow, that's awesome. Keep that one.
And I mean, they're, you know, 40-inch snook, and the last time I saw the tarpon, they were probably in the 30 to 40 pound range.
Wow. That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
That's really cool. One of the things that I've noticed, last year, I talked about this one particular day quite a bit because it was the most epic thing I would think I've ever seen in my entire life on the Intercoastal. We had a ton of water dumping out of the canal systems that run through North Merritt Island into the Indian River. And all this water pushing through, the current was moving so fast that the bait fish had nowhere to go. And that's the bait fish that were in the river that were trying to get into the canal system. And it was the craziest thing you'd ever seen. There were finger mullet that were stacked up side by side. It looked like you could have walked on them. They were so thick. And they were like swimming on top of each other trying to stay out of the water because below them was certain death. There was just tons and tons of big redfish and small redfish, just all different sizes. And like I said, they had these mullet herded up against the bank. There was nowhere for them to go. I mean, they were trying to get into the canal system, but the water was just moving too quick. And, man, they were just blowing up on them. I watched 30- and 40-inch redfish come clear out of the water. And they said, you know, the question, redfish can't jump or whatever. Dude, these fish were clear in water with mullet in their mouth, like tuna. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. I had three of my good buddies with me, and none of us had ever seen it before. It was just absolutely ballistic. I was out there like an idiot in 30-mile-an-hour winds with a fly rod. Like, I guess I was thinking I was going to do something with that. But the mullet were so thick, I was able to snag mullet with the fly. I had it tied on the fly rod and hand them off to my buddies who had a DOA shrimp hook attached to their line because they just pulled the shrimp off. They weren't eating the shrimp. They were just wanting mullet. And we proceeded in a matter of just a few minutes just to crush a bunch of them. So it could be really good over here on our coast. But then again, our intercoastal, I think our salinity as it stands anyway, is much lower than that over there on the West Coast, because you guys have basically just about direct Gulf access. We're more of like, I don't even know, it's darn near stagnant at times. So, you know, I don't know, interesting. It's really cool. There's some spots over here, especially in Titusville area, that are covered up in culverts because of the mosquito impoundments. And, man, when it rains a lot, those guys go out there, they open up those floodgates, and gosh, it is just, it's on. I see Pepe just joined us there in the chat room. He's a local guy, and I know he's probably had a couple of opportunities to get out and fish those culverts as I'm talking about, and man, it could be good. It could be solid, and it's one of those times where you can really try to experiment with a lot of different things, and and see if you can you know, kind of crack the codes, so to speak, on big fish during that time. Because, you know, most of us have kind of a hard time, especially getting bigger redfish to eat artificials. I'm talking, you know, upper end of 30-inch range up to the 40 and 50-inch fish. But this is the one time, I guess, when that water really moves, they just get so dumb, so excited about eating that they'll gobble up just about anything. But, Mr. Becker, I know you're still relatively new to the state of Florida, but you probably had plenty of time to fish in the rain. You got any tips that you use as far as locating fish, or, you know, maybe areas you try and look for?
Yeah, I just follow Haywood around and catch the ones he missed. which is why I don't do too well, because I got to tell you, Bill Howard does not miss many fish. Did I save that one? Did that work out okay?
That was good. That was
actually. That was very smooth.
There you go.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's been said, anything that creates an outlet or creates a current, you know, that's unexpected or creates a big food source with stuff washing in, especially in trout streams, you know, unfortunately when they get dirty very quickly, and, you know, the guys who wind up dunking night crawlers will wind up doing a lot better than somebody who's swinging a wet fly, dry fly combination or a couple of wet flies. One of the things I have seen that was pretty cool is smallmouth bass stacking up on a little mud line that was created from a little ditch that came in. Wasn't washing any food in, but the mud line apparently created some kind of structure or whatever, and probably 30 or 40 smallmouth stacking up on this little mud finger that stuck out into a freshwater lake up in Maine many, many years ago. That's that.
Sweet. There you go. Yeah, you know, it's one of those, you know, even when I was a kid growing up fishing on ponds and lakes up here in Central Florida and catching bass and brim and all that kind of thing, I never really shied away from fishing in the rain. It didn't matter to me unless there was lightning popping. Me and lightning don't mix very well. So, you know, I feel that I don't know. Maybe I think I have better luck, honestly, fishing in the rain for certain species too, because they seem to get a little bit more aggressive. And again, maybe even getting a little dumb just because food is so readily available to them. So yeah, it doesn't bother me, you know, at all. Just the safety factor of making sure that you're not fishing in the middle of a heavy thunderstorm with lightning cracking everywhere. But, you know, with that being said, if you should be out on the water and get caught up in one of these squalls that come in the summertime, there's a few things for you not to do, one of which would be sitting underneath a tree on an island. Not a very good idea. Use your kayak if you can as cover. If you can find a place to get to, even if you get to the island, get up on the island, drag the kayak up, flip it upside down if you can, or sideways or whatever, and kind of huddle underneath it. But stay away from trees as best you can. A couple years ago here on the Space Coast, there was almost an entire family was wiped out by lightning strike on an island. So definitely something to think about. Bridges work, you know, if you can find a small low bridge, get underneath the bridge, kind of hang out there, let it pass. But if you're just in steady rain and, you know, you're not experiencing any thunderstorms or no lightning or anything like that, fishing could be quite good. Quite good. I got another caller from 321. Who's this? You're on Kayak Fishing Radio.
Chuck Levi, it's Mike Batarak.
What's going on, Mike? Mr. Tarpon.
What are you doing, brother?
Chilling, man.
I was just listening to your radio, man. Yeah, I got 9 today.
Nice. Did you get some back there where you launched?
No, it was so tight back in there. It was very hard to get them, you know, where you could actually cast, because what happened is the you know, a canoe or a kayak would actually bump into the mangrove a little bit. It was so tight, and
yeah,
the tarpon would go down a little bit, and couldn't get them back there. You needed two people to do the work back there. One guy to keep you stable, and maybe one guy to cast.
Did you see a bunch back there though, or?
Yeah, I mean, there was a handful of little guys back there, but they were just they're pretty wary of what was going on. You know, I don't know. It was tight, though. I mean, if you put both your arms out side by side, you know, side to side, you'd be touching either side of the mangrove. So it was pretty skinny.
Yeah, it's overgrown quite a bit. For those of you listening, this is Captain Mike Batarak from Space Coast. What's the name of your business, brother? I'm sorry. Space
Sport Coast. Fishing. Yep.
Sport Fishing. Yep. And if you're ever in Central Florida and you want to go after giant tarpon or giant snook and do it on a fly rod or do it on spin tackle, either way, Mike's your guy. I ran into Mike today, actually, while we were out looking for a little ditch tarpon, me and Trey, and he had his canoe with him, which I didn't know that he had one. So that's pretty cool to see that he's in a paddle craft of some kind. But what's your – dude, speaking of, like, flowing water and finding fish around culverts and stuff, I know you fish a lot of areas, like down south. There's some creeks and stuff that you like to move up in and look for those tarpon and snook. Do you have any tactics that you try and use or areas you try and look for those fish?
Yeah, that's what I called because I heard what you were talking about, and I was like, oh, man, you know. And that's the way it really worked for me last year is that – in September and October, remember we had a lot of rain last year.
Yeah.
You know, during that period of time, and it just made the tarpon really, lackadaisical when it came to, you know, fishing them. And I would say over 200 of them came in that period of time that the rainfall was coming down so heavy and it was thick and it was just washing all the minnows out. And what you were saying is that they don't pay really much attention. They just see something go by and take a snap at it. And I think that's what they do. I don't think they're very discriminating as far as, what they're eating. They just see something come out of a pipe and they're like, oh, hey, there it is. Boom. They got a second to make a decision and they make the decision to eat it. And that's was one of the biggest things for me, is fishing that period of time when there was that much rainfall that, you know, some days I would get 14, some days I'd get 18 a day, you know, because they were just on those pipes just eating and eating and eating. And especially in the Sebastian River area, I mean, you have such a long stretch of area there and all those little canals that come out of it, little ditches that are flowing into it, you know, it presents a great opportunity. You can spend an entire day there and not even cover 10% of it.
Yeah, I haven't done a whole lot of the tarpon fishing, especially in the river, up until the last couple of years. And, actually what kind of got me fired up on it was after we did have a quite a heavy rain event, the water level in the river rose, it seemed like 4 foot. I mean, I know that's a bit drastic, but it seemed like it was that much higher. I mean, water was in areas I'd never seen, you know, water back up in these canals and whatnot like it was. So, I finally just saw your comment there, Greg, when I was a kid last November. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, it was only about 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, dude, I'm slow tonight. Don't mind me. But anyhow, so I'm sitting there on the edge of this dock. It's like there's a dock, and then there's a line of mangroves, and then there's nothing but mud over here in the river. It was pretty cool because I'm sitting there, I'm catching a couple of redfish here and there, some tailwind fish, and then I got a couple of nice trout. I look over and I saw something silver roll, and I'm thinking to myself, God, please let that have been a tarpon. And I look right there, same exact spot again, same thing, and then another one like right after it, and there was ended up being a small group of them, and I stood up in the kayak, and you could just barely pick out their silhouette as they're cruising past the edge of the mangroves. I mean, the water was a little dirty, so you couldn't see them as well as I would have hoped to have been able to see them, but I threw a pearl white Berkeley Gulp jerk shad about 3 or 4 foot out in front of them, let it sink, and I popped it just as soon as it got to it and watched one of them go up and just gulp it, just nice and slow as if it was like one of those worms down there in a worm hatch in the Keys. Come up and just gulped it and went down with it. I pulled the hook on him, I set the hook on him, and he ran right at me, jumped. I thought he was coming in the kayak, so I'll admit it. I threw my hands up kind of like a little girl, like, oh, you know, and I kind of batted it down, and it landed in the water. It shot underneath the kayak and jumped up on the other side and broke me off. But it was a good 15-pound fish. It was probably, yeah, probably one of the coolest moments that I think I've ever experienced in the kayak, as far as, you know, the quickness of how everything happened. It was like, threw, he gulped it, he shot out at me, I smacked him out of the air, and then he ran underneath me, jumped and broke me off in a matter of 15 seconds. And so, you know, it was really cool. But now that I've kind of been able to explore the fishery a little bit more, and they're definitely on my hit list. Probably one of my favorite species to target, for sure. I'm hoping to get into some bigger ones this rainy season out of the kayak. There's some areas that dude, there's some areas that I really want to go fish that, or at least explore, that I haven't had a chance to lately. Mike, there's an area that's down in the south end of the lagoon. Pepe, I'm sure you know about it. That everybody for the longest time has thought is off limits, that you're not allowed to put any kind of craft in there unless it's duck season and they open it up for ducks. And that's not the case, as I found out by asking one of the people at the Playlanda Beach guard shack. Apparently, you're legally allowed to put in a paddle craft and or motorized vessel in any waterway out there on the refuge, as long as it's not on the NASA side of the main road that goes out past Playlanda.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that waterway, that if you're going out to Playlanda Beach that you see on the left, all that backwater estuary that's back in there, you can put in there and you can paddle around in there all you want to. I did it a couple months ago with Aaron, from who listens to the show, and my buddy Scott. And, dude, there is just, it's ridiculous back there. I mean, unfortunately, we did it the wrong time of year. And we didn't see much but bait, a lot of bait. And it was windy with all get out, so it made it kind of tough. But I've seen hundreds of tarpon back there rolling around, little ones, medium-sized ones, some bigger ones. So it'll definitely be one of those places I'll have on my hit list for rainy season, for sure. But I'm going to take a break from that real quick. We've got a pretty decent amount of people in the chat room. I don't know how many are still hanging in there, but I want to get to something real fast. I've got two things going on. First thing that I've got going on is my buddy Chris Flores. I talk about him all the time here on the show. He's my buddy. He does filming for The Amazing Race. He's done Cops. He's done a bunch of stuff. Chris and I have been talking for, over a year about different ideas as far as coming up with a show, some sort of an educational-based fishing show, but loosely based on fishing, more based on the adventure, so on and so forth. Not something that you are going to see on Versus or on Outdoor Channel. It's more like something you'd see on Discovery, Nat Geo, something like that. So bouncing these ideas back and forth for such a long time, we've kind of refined it down to something that we think would work really well. And we've got actually two ideas. The first one is a little bit closer to being a reality, and that's the one I want to talk about tonight. We're looking for people who would be interested in becoming part of the cast, or possibly becoming part of the cast for a adventure slash worldwide eco kind of a deal. The wording, let me get the proper wording right before I butcher this thing all to pieces. What we've got is Chris's agent and attorney have already been pitched this idea, and they're wanting to take it directly to Nat Geo to see if they'll be interested in purchasing the show idea. It's basically a worldwide educational docu-reality type show embedded with different cultures, etc., with fishing as being like an underlined deal. It's kind of like a fishing show masked as an adventure show. What we have is to go ahead to try and film a sizzle reel, or basically a pilot, to kind of give the network something to look at and see if they're interested in purchasing a number of shows. That's kind of how TV works. So I'm throwing it out there to you guys as my listeners and friends of mine. If you're interested or know somebody that might be interested in being called back for an interview for this, feel free to send me an email, or you can send Chris an email. My email address is chuckskayakadventures@hotmail.com. And I'm pulling Chris's up right now. Let me see where it is here. He's really excited about the opportunity, and for him to be as excited about it as he is, this thing could truly be a reality very shortly. His email address is Christopher Flores, Flores, @me.com. And, so there you have it. I'm telling you, nothing's guaranteed, of course, but we've got the right people in place to make this thing a reality. And if it is, it will be one trip that I'm sure you wouldn't want to miss. And so there you go. If you want to be involved, get involved in any way, shape, or form, put together a little bio about yourself, maybe throw in a picture, pretty good, high-quality picture, and even if you're goofy looking, we'll take it. And, we just want to try and find a cast of people. We're looking for men and women, couples, of all different fishing abilities. So pass it along. You know, let folks know that you might have in your inner circle that's what we're looking for. So, well, there you go. But anyhow, the other thing that we're going to do too. I spoke with Mr. Becker about it a little bit the other day, and I actually called and spoke with the man himself. Where's our soundbite? Do we have a soundbite for them? I think we do. Maybe not. Bueller. Anyway, I spoke with Jim Dolan from Heroes on the Water, and I want to do a documentary / kind of a show thing with them as well, to really kind of bring to light everything those guys do for the injured military veterans that are coming back from the war, and those that are still those that are already here. Jim said it best when I talked to him on the phone. We're not a charity. What was the word he used? I don't want to misquote him. I can't even think of what he said, man. But it basically, they are truly a rehabilitation source for these men and women, and the things that they do for these people are just incredible. So I'd like to try and do something, even if it's just to thanks, Greg. I want to do something with those guys, even if it's just to kind of help to raise awareness. So look for that to come through too. I'm sure we'll get Mr. Becker to help out as well. So, but yeah, there's a lot of good things going on with that organization right now. They're growing just leaps and bounds every day. And I'm going to have Jim on the show here probably in the next couple of weeks. So it'll be good. But let's get back to fishing. Let's talk fishing. Becker.
Levi.
I'm going to go to you because you're giving me a hard time. That's
all right. I can type and talk at the same time. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Good.
Yep.
Good. That's good.
It's all
awesome.
Good, bro.
Yeah, no problem. So what was I going to say? Let me know. Give me an idea of your typical setup you would use for this time of year fishing, whether it be moving water or whatever. Do you have a favorite kind of, say, a favorite rig to use? Do you change anything up if you're fishing moving water as opposed to just still water?
No.
It's all the same? Pass. All right, Bill.
Yeah. Yeah, go to Bill first. I'll be right back.
Thanks, Becker. Bill. You there, buddy?
No, I use the same stuff year round. It doesn't matter what conditions. I'll either, it just depends on where I'm setting up. You know, a top water across a creek mouth with moving waters is sometimes deadly. And then other times just a jerk bait, but no, I don't switch it up that much. Usually just stick to about five different lures. That's all I ever use, you know. Nothing different.
Yeah. I definitely pretty much do the same thing, man. I've got probably a dozen of my favorite things to throw, and that's, it doesn't matter if it's spring, summer, fall, winter, it doesn't make a difference. I use it. We got another caller here, 678 area code.
Just listening.
All right, cool, man. I'll put you back on mute then. Let's see, Mike.
Yep.
What do you change it? Do you change up your tactics or your techniques at all when you're fishing rainy conditions or moving water?
The only thing I do with moving water is I'll usually do something with a little more action on it. You know, just, you know, if it's maybe a lip plug or something like that, or you know, something like a fly with a little more flash in it or something along those lines, just because the water is moving so quick and I want to get the attention really quick, because usually the fish that are fishing, you know, in that moving water that are coming there eating and everything like that, they're not really that picky. You know, they're not finicky. Like if you're fishing laid up tarpon, you know, that's sitting in on a grass bed somewhere, those fish are real wary as to what's going on. The fish that are sitting on any of that moving water or pipe flows and stuff, they have they're oblivious to what's going on around them. They're just there to eat whatever comes out. So I'll just get something that's, you know, maybe even a little bit ridiculous. Like if you had like a chartreuse with a bunch of crystal flash in it on the fly, where it doesn't really, you know, a lot of times in the backwater you use black or purples and things like that. I'll just use something oddball like that just so they see it and get their attention in the dark water. And they seem to just take it pretty well, just, you know, because they're there to eat. They're not there worrying about things or, you know, saying, oh, man, you know, I got to watch the fishermen. They're just sitting out at that pipe. And it's just like a buffet. So most of the time those fish aren't really that picky. So I'll just add a little extra movement or, you know, and a little extra color just to get them, just to get their attention a little more. Because sometimes that water's pretty murky coming out of there. That's really the only thing that I change up.
Right on. Rob, do you do anything different?
Yeah, the only thing that I might do different is I'm going to fish in you know, deeper water in the summer, usually. Not so much moving water, but I'm definitely going to probably add a little bit more weight to my soft plastic array, like go from 1/16 to maybe a quarter or something like that. But that's about it, because I'm usually fishing a little bit deeper water.
Right,
but everything else is usually, you know, the same top water, you know, soft plastic, curly tail or shad tail, and a miridine, you know, and that's generally about it.
Yeah, very cool. The what was I going to say? There's actually been a lot of buzz that I've read on some of the tackle forums about the suspending baits and guys having issues with fishing suspended baits in shallow water. It's, to me, man, those things are underutilized, especially over here on this coast. I know most of the guys over here stick with plastics or stick with topwaters and don't really explore the miridines or the twitching wraps or even the bigger shad wraps. There's one. What's that big one? Does anybody know the name of the big one that Rapala has out? It's a big suspending bait. The guys use it a lot for tarpon. But I don't know. One of our local captains here throws the thing. Yeah, the mega wrap. Maybe that's what it is. There's anyway. It's a big plug. It's like, God, it's got to be 7 or 8 inches long. The thing is giant. And I watch guys hurl that thing off the bow of flats boats all the time in the schools of big breeder reds, and they do quite well with it. So definitely something to look into if you want to try and hook into some bigger fish, bigger bait, bigger fish, maybe. I don't know. But let's hit this real quick.
Boondoggle.
Boondoggle. What the heck is a boondoggle? It's a bunch of crazy kayakers getting together in Virginia Beach October 5th through 8th. For more information, check out yakangler.com, the ultimate resource for kayak fishermen.
That's the voice of our good friend Steve Chapman from Fishing Florida Radio from 7:40 The Game, Saturday mornings from 6 to 9. The boondoggle, man, we got to talk about that real quick. Throw that in there. Man, it's going to be a lot of fun. Virginia Beach, Virginia, fishing the Chesapeake Bay with some of those guys up there. Not really interested in fishing with Mr. Lozier because he doesn't use root beer and gold flake soft plastics. But, you know, it's cool. Yeah, Kayak Kevin will be down there, I believe. Rob Choi is going to be hanging out. I think Chad Hoover's going to show up. So it should be a good time had by all up there, man. The fishing should be pretty spot on, pretty spectacular. We're looking for hopefully some big flounder, maybe some stripers. I don't know. Is that happening up there that time of year, Mark? Stripers? In the chat room there, maybe he'll pipe up and tell me. Maybe some tog. I haven't caught blackfish in a long time, so that'd be cool. Either way, boondoggles are a lot of fun. Everyone's invited. There's no like special fee you have to pay. I've been asked that a couple times now. It's just you show up, you have to pay for obviously where you're staying and your food and such. But once you get there, man, it's probably the coolest thing I've been a part of. The last one we did was in Chokoleski. 55 people showed up, and it was a great time. Fishing was pretty good. Could have been better, but it was even more fun to hang out with all the like-minded people that came up and spent some time with us. So, you know, feel free if you want to make the journey up there, Columbus Day weekend, Virginia Beach, Virginia. I don't know if there's any places left for as far as cabins are concerned at First Landing State Park, but you can look into it. My wife and I booked ours, and when we booked ours, there was only two left. So I don't know. You know, I know there's 10 sites still available, I'm pretty sure. And I guess there's a pile of hotels up there that are local to it. And, you know, talk to some folks that are already signed up. Maybe they're looking to split the cost of a hotel room or split the split a cabin or something like that. But try and make it up there and experience what I would say the kayak fishing lifestyle is all about. Good people, good fun, good food. God, the food was incredible. Hopefully we'll do a boil again like we did last time. But yeah, there you go. You'll meet a lot of really cool people, man. These folks will end up being like part of your family. So good times. But let's see. What else we got going on? Mike, tell me a good tarpon story, man. What's the word on the tarpon in the river?
Well, the river's been hit or miss. It's just you know, it seems like one day they're loaded up in there, and then you go back the very next day and it's just nothing. And so it's kind of been a little bit, you know, inconsistent at this point. But it still is pretty early. I mean, it is just going into June, usually June, July, August, September. That's your peak months. You know, May kind of started a little bit early. They were started showing up basically April this year in the river. But it was just such a warm winter. I mean, it was in 80s in January. So I think everything just got, you know, kind of pushed a little bit, you know, off time schedule. But you know, hopefully the tarpon will come in on the beaches. Last year was pretty terrible. They didn't come in on the beaches as good as they did 2 years ago. 2 years ago was phenomenal. It was the best beach run I've ever seen in, you know, 30 years of fishing it. And you know, last year just kind of tanked. It really didn't happen. But the river happened last year very well. So I think as the, you know, the rain continues, as we start getting into the rainy season, you know, as long as we don't have too much rain, because sometimes when you get too much rain, it pushes them, you know, and spreads them out too thin, because you get too much fresh water back in an area, and you'll start seeing, like, alligator gars and stuff floating around Sebastian River and, you know, some of the backwater places. And if the gars are out pretty far in the river system, usually the tarpon are out even farther. So I don't like too much fresh water, because I want to keep them in a small area where I can kind of contain them, you know, for the best part, where you can see them. But, you know, it should improve here. I mean, the bait's there. There's a lot of mullet. There's a lot of little pokies. You know, it, as that bait stays there, those fish should be, you know, getting really pretty much every day consistent here, you know, anytime, you know, within a week, I would assume.
Yeah, it's, see, I'm telling you, it's going to be, I don't know, it's going to be interesting to see what all the data has to show down, you know, in the years to come from all the DNA swabs that are being done on these fish locally. I know you've been crushing it the last couple of years with that. How many DNA swabs did you do last year?
I did 268 last year.
Golly. 268 individual fish.
And while I was down there today, I saw John Mallory, and he was there when right after I saw you today. He pulled up, and I was talking to him. I talked to him for about an hour and a half. And I had 268, he had 243. And, you know, pretty much that's why now it seems like the East Coast, West Coast thing, that they started doing different categories to separate the East Coast and West Coast, because it seems like we have a lot of those backwater smaller fish, where the West Coasters are mainly fishing the passes and things like that. We're talking about that today. But John's off to he's going to be hard to catch this year, because after we had our competition last year, and he won 2 years ago, I won last year, and then this year he said, I'm not letting you win, I'm going to go every day. And John can do it. He's retired, so he doesn't have to go to work, and he's been spending about 6 to 8 hours a day sampling fish. So
crazy.
I would say he's got at least 100 right now or more, probably. He won't give it an exact number, so I know it's a good number. he's gonna try to put it on everybody this year. But you know, that's a lot of fish. I mean, you figure, you know, even if everybody just, you know, went out and did a few, if you could do, you know, 5 or 10 fish for the whole year, you know, you add that by hundreds of anglers, that's a lot of data that is collected at that point, you know, when you add all that up. And all it's going to do is tell the future of our fishery for the tarpon program, you know, what the tarpon are doing. And they started putting, and I'm sure you know already, but they started putting the receivers in the river. I was actually talking to a biologist when I went up and sampled fish up on NASA. They put receivers not only in Sebastian River, but Turkey Creek and, you know, all the way down the entire river system. And these tarpon are just like basically little pings when they go back and forth when they have the radio satellites on them. And he showed me one of the things, which was kind of neat. He showed me a little spreadsheet and showed the tarpon moving, staying in there in the middle of the day. But at night, they moved out into the main river. And then by, you know, close to sunrise the next morning, they were moving back into the little, you know, into Sebastian River or into Turkey Creek or, you know, whatever little area that they were in. But it showed them going out in the middle of the night into the main river, which I thought was pretty interesting. And then by about, you know, 3 or 4 in the morning, they'd start working their way back into the creek where they would spend the rest of the day. But NASA's doing their biologists down there are doing a really good job with the GPS tracking. And you know, they haven't set up the same thing. They have Banana Creek down in Titusville and Moores Creek. All that is already set up with their little satellites and their little pinging systems. And they're tracking all these tarpon. I was hoping to get all the data so I could kind of see, okay, this is where I'm going to fish every day. But he didn't give me all that, so I'm still working on them though. But they got a big grant from, and I don't know who gave them the grant, but it's NASA, so they have, you know, they have a lot of resources at their, you know, at their hands there. So. But he's got a lot of stuff going with the new GPS satellites, and I know Bonefish and Tarpon are in on that too. So it should be a good thing for the fishery. I think it's going to be a really strong fishery and continue to, you know, continue to grow, especially since it's not any food value. So that's definitely a plus.
Yeah, and I wonder if those fish are moving in and out to go out and feed on the crabs and the shrimp that move more at night than anything else, you know.
I think you're right.
You know, after shrimping for so many years here on the intercoastal, it's absolutely incredible the number of crabs that you see at night just floating across the surface. We don't really have passes except for down at Sebastian, really. And so we don't really have a lot of movement of, you know, strong movement of water. We don't really have a tide flow really to speak of either. So I think that that maybe that's one of the reasons. I mean, I know they love to eat crabs, and what better time to pick crabs off the surface or, you know, make an easy meal out of it than when the moon's right and all the planets are in alignment, the crabs are moving thick, and I don't know, man, it may cause for us to have to try and do a little outing one night and see if we can locate some or something. I don't know. But
yeah, feel out there. I mean, like you said, because I noticed some of the fish that I catch at night at Sebastian, they have that gold or tannic color. You know how some of the backwater fish look.
Yeah.
They got that, you know. But most of them aren't big. Most of them are anywhere from, you know, 40 to 60 pounds, and you'll see that little gold tannic on them. And I know those are Sebastian River fish that are actually out in the inlet at night fishing. You know,
yeah.
catch their food and stuff like that, and they moved out. Because you can see the color. You know, when you catch one of those ocean fish, they got that blue or that green back, you know, that's really, I mean, just stands out. And you know that's an ocean fish that's migrated in versus, you know, a fish that's a residence back there that has moved out to, you know, feed in some of the, you know, like an outgoing tide or you know, whatever, and he's going to fish, get an extra couple crabs or some shrimp or whatever, and then work his way back. So
right.
I think you're dead on with that.
Yeah. That's really cool, man. It's really cool information, and it's crazy, the technology that's being used to track those fish. But real quick, Rob, I've got a question in the chat room. What kind of video editing software do you guys use for your for the videos? Rob, what are you using again?
I'm using iMovie. It comes standard with your Mac, and I edit it there and do just about all the pre-production there. And then I take and run it through StreamClip. It's a program called StreamClip, and convert it. And that's where I make it really, I try to make it high quality HD. It really sharpens it up a bit and everything. You can make it up to 1080p. So that's all I do.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have a Mac, so anything that I've done, which isn't much, is done on Movie Maker, and it sucks. So,
sorry.
There you go. Yeah.
Macs are expensive, but for doing creative endeavors, they're really, really good. But I wasn't killing it. You know, I wasn't like killing my bank account by getting a Mac. I mean, I got a Mac Mini, which I got out the door for like $600, I think. You know, which you'd pay that on a halfway decent Windows machine. So, and it's very tiny. I can't believe how small it is and how much I can actually do with it. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and I can't wait to see your time-lapse stuff you just shot, man. And I appreciate you missing out on an opportunity to shoot more time-lapse to be here with us tonight. And that's a good sacrifice you made for the greater good of Kayak Fishing Radio.
Oh, no problem. It came out really cool. It was my first one, and we were down at Siesta Key this morning. We got up at like 4:30 this morning and went down to Siesta Key. We were going to go snook fishing on the beach, but it, you know, the wind was really up, and it was just not a good day for it. So I didn't even take the rods out of the car. And just went down and, you know, shot some video, and then got kicked off the beach by the Siesta Key Beachkeepers Association. Not supposed to have a dog on the beach. You know, my dog, laying there on a beach towel, you know, was really, I guess, a terrible thing. So I understand. I should have read the signs and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I'll go by the rules. But we had to go about 10 miles south to Venice Beach, where they actually have a really, really nice dog beach down there. And it was awesome. My dog was just laying there, you know, on the beach towel, watching the other dogs run, you know, tackle the surf and everything else, and was howling at the other dogs. It was pretty cool. It was pretty funny.
There you go. That's cool, man.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's good day out with the canine companion.
Absolutely.
We got a dog at the shop where I work, and I don't own a dog, but I have a dog that's at the shop that I kind of consider my dog, since I'm seeming to be the only one that cares about the thing. It's like, it's part wolf, part German Shepherd.
Wow.
It's like, it's the craziest looking dog. It's like chocolate brown, like a lab. I mean, like, yeah, like a chocolate lab, but it's got like bright yellow eyes.
Oh.
And it's just nasty. I don't know how this became a dog show, but it's nasty, man. It's a crazy looking dog. I'd love to take that dog down to a dog beach sometime. But anyhow, cool. That's awesome, man. Mr. Becker, are you planning on doing any fishing this weekend with your now that you've gotten the hominis dominus? It's okay to go back at it.
Yep, was actually out for a little while this past weekend, and as in yesterday, with just a spooky dude or junior fly reel, depending on what forum you're on, for a couple hours, and then got the wife and daughter out for a couple hours also, which was very nice. Next Saturday is the Tampa Bay chapter of Heroes on the Water's next event at Fort DeSoto in southern end of Pinellas County. We've got, I think, 8 or 9 vets lined up and a bunch of people to get out and show some folks what it's like being out on the water and fishing out of a kayak. So we'll be over there for that early on Saturday, and then got another event following that 2 weeks later at E.G. Simmons Park in Hillsborough County. So on the schedule, getting filled up, but we've always got room for one or two more. So if you know of anybody who'd like to come along, give a holler.
Awesome. Absolutely. Rob, another question for you, buddy, in the chat room.
Yeah.
Question is, do you still shoot, or do you shoot from a GoPro?
Yeah, I do. I run three cameras off of my kayak, usually. And I use one GoPro. I put it on my head with the headband strap. And then I have a forward-mounted, what I like to call, and everybody calls, the vanity shot. And it's mounted towards me at the bow of the kayak. What I use is a flat-mount GoPro flat mount with a thumb screw on it. And I use a Swan freestyle camera on the front. And then in the back, I have a 67-inch monopod that I can mount a variety of ways. Actually, Saturday, we were up at Weekiwachi River, and it's an awesome place to paddle. It was like being at a theme park, though, I've never seen more people on that river, ever. So I didn't really get a chance to film a whole lot, but I take the monopod and I can either stick it in a rod holder in the back and shoot from overhead. Excuse me, I'm like trying to burp. And I'm like, I can shoot from overhead and or I can shoot from the side. I can lay the monopod. I put a ball mount on the back. Or on it, and so you can, you know, move the camera every which way you can think of. And I can lay it down sideways behind the kayak. I can lay it down sideways in the front of the kayak. And I was doing that. I was kind of experimenting with it, doing some different stuff. So that's why I'm not fully GoPro. I do some GoPro, some Swan freestyle.
Very, very cool. And speaking of filming, Mike, I saw that you guys did that that deal with University of Florida about Space Coast ecotourism. You want to plug that real quick?
Yeah, I mean they just pretty much they're trying to find something with basically the Tourist Development Council and you know, the University of Florida really pitched it. I mean they did a phenomenal job. The lady that did it for us was Holly, and you know, she just it was basically I don't know, we did I think 5 classes you know, different weeks throughout the year, and you know, they just educated on, you know, because people ask all these questions like, what's this bird, what's that bird, what's this fish, and what's that manatee, and so on and so forth, you know, just things that they ask you while you're out there. And, you know, some of the birds, most of the birds you know, but there's some that just pop up and you're like, I don't know what that is. So they gave you that education on it. And then they really plugged, we're trying to get the tourists to, you know, come down and experience, you know, the real Florida, not just, you know, some condo sitting there, you know, in Kissimmee or Orlando or anything like that, and just going to Disney and all that, you know, junk. They want to go, you know, to let them use the resource and see what the real Florida is about with, you know, the backwater creeks and canals and the river systems and the ocean. And so University of Florida put that whole package together, and we were actually the first group. There's five of us that went through it, and it, you know, they're promoting us and everything, and they're doing television program, you know, as far as the commercials and advertisement, and it's in with the, you know, the Tourist Development Council for Brevard County. So now they're trying to do it around the state, you know, and get people, I guess, certified, for lack of a better word, you know, to do such a program where they can rely on them, you know, the tourists can come down and like the Tourist Development Council, the hotels can say, okay, you know, you can go with this group of captains because, you know, yeah, they're certified, but, you know, they also, you have to, you know, you have insurance, you have drug testing, you have, you know, all this stuff. So they know they're going with, you know, somebody reputable and not just, you know, some guy that's got a pint of rum on the floor somewhere. And, you know, so it gives people and families, I guess, a better sense of security knowing who they're going out with, and it's backed by the university and the hotels and things like that. So they did a great job. The University of Florida really did. They really did a jam-up job on it.
Yeah, I watched the video, sad to say, for the first time today. And it came out really well. And kudos to you guys for doing that. I think that that's really going to parlay into some good business for you.
I think so. I think so, because I think that's, you know, that's the future. I mean, people from Kansas and Chicago and all these other places, they've never seen a, you know, I mean, just having them on my boat when I take them fishing, you know, we'll get a manatee that'll come up, and sometimes when the water will flow out of my live well, they'll come right up to the back of the boat. And I mean, they'll stop fishing. They just stop, put the rods down, and they go back there, and they'll hang out with that manatee for like 20, 30 minutes. You know, just looking at it, because they're like, oh, my God, you know, what is that? And they're just like, hey, look, he's chewing on the, you know, trim tabs, or, you know, he's doing whatever he's doing back there. Or, like, they see a dolphin or a pelican. And, you know, most, we take it for granted because we see it every day. But for most people, they're just like, man, this is, like, the coolest thing. Or they see an osprey sitting in a tree with a mullet, you know, and they can't, and jumping mullet, that's another thing. They freak out over jumping mullet. They're like, man, what is that? You know, and it's just, it's kind of funny to watch because they're all like little kids when you get them out. And they're like, wow, you guys have never seen a mullet or a pelican? And, you know, but you forget because, you know, we're kind of spoiled here. We have all that already.
Right.
So, you know.
Well, if anybody wants to get with you, man, and book a trip, tarpon fishing, snook fishing, red fishing, trout, whatever, how can they get a hold of you?
They can either, you know, one, visit our website, which is spacecoastsportfishing.com, or they, you know, you can just give me a call, and, you know, I'll be more than happy to get you guys out and you know, do whatever you want to do. If you want a redfish or trout fish or, you know, tarpon, snook, whatever.
Very cool. Very cool. Again, that's Captain Mike Batterack, man. I appreciate you coming on the show. I got a thing I got to hit real quick to promote the Florida Sportsman Kayak Fishing Tournament that has been put in place. Very interesting stuff. So here we go.
Hi, y'all. This is Bonita Bob Bramblett inviting you to participate in the Florida Sportsman Kayak Fishing Challenge. Win a Hobie Revolution brought to you by Estero River Outfitters, as well as weekly prizes by Deep South Fishing Rods and Yak Attack. For more details, check out floridasportsman.com.
One more cast, one more try. Wow, there you go. So for any more information that you might would want on Florida Sportsman's kayak fishing tournament series, check out floridasportsman.com. Those guys have done a really good job as far as getting the word out about kayak fishing. Again, they got a new book coming out here very shortly. Florida Sportsman's best, I guess, that they consider the series. And kayak fishing is the title of the book, and should be a really good read. So look for that to be coming out very shortly. And we're at our hour mark. I appreciate everybody joining us tonight. Don't forget to tune into the other shows throughout the week. We got the Double L show tomorrow night. We've got Mr. Wheeler's show on Wednesday night. We got Chip Gibson's show on. That was weird. We got Chip Gibson's show on Thursday night, and we also have the Spike and Ike show. I believe has been moved to Sundays. I'll have to double check that and get back with you guys later about that. But let's see, real quick, yakangler.com.
Looking for a group of kayak anglers to share your kayak fishing adventures with? Check out yakangler.com, your ultimate fishing resource.
Yeah, yakangler.com. Mark and Adam put together a great website. It's full of great information. It is strictly a kayak fishing website. And if you guys have any questions or concerns about any kind of products that might be out there or reviews that you want done or what have you, feel free to email those guys or any of the pro staff members from yakangler.com, and we'll be sure to try and get something put up there for you or answer your questions. Great group of people. Yakangler.com and Kayak Fishing Radio in conjunction put on the Boondoggles. And,
Boondoggle, Boondoggle, Boondoggle. What the heck's a boondoggle? Check out yakangler.com. Your ultimate kayak fishing resource.
Columbus Day weekend. Once again, I'll plug it one more time for, before the end of the show. Columbus Day weekend, October 5th through the 8th. We're going to be up at First Landing State Park on the banks of the well-known and becoming ever more famous Chesapeake Bay. So it should be really, really cool. Looking forward to it, getting a chance to put a line in the water with a bunch of my really good friends and some folks that I admire. So we'll see. But other than that, I'm out. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Mr. Becker, Mike Batarak, and Rob, a bad podcast DeVore. Thank you, Bill Haywood, for joining us for that time. And to everybody else in the chat room that joined us tonight and those of you that are listening to the podcast, I greatly appreciate all of the support. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, feel free to email me at chuckskayakadventures@hotmail.com. Don't forget, also, too, we're putting out the word that we're looking for some folks to get involved with the show idea that we're trying to pitch to Nat Geo. So if you want to get involved with that, you can email me at, again, chuckskayakadventures@hotmail.com. Or you can email Chris Flores at Christopher Flores, Flores, at me.com with your bio and some information about yourself and a photo. And in the next probably 5 to 6 weeks, we'll be calling people back and getting in touch with folks about getting involved with the scissor reel that we need to do to promote the idea to the networks. So. Should be cool. But other than that, you guys all be safe. And we'll talk to you next weekend. Appreciate it very much. And don't forget to check out, like I said, don't forget to check out the shows coming up the rest of the week. But I'm out and spent. I got nothing else to say. So with that, good night. Trey and Logan, sleep. Daddy needs it. See you.